You know, Milwaukee is it's a great city and the surrounding suburbs. I mean, certainly there are we have our challenges and our issues and our flaws as any city would, but I think that, you know, Milwaukee has done so much, and what I hear from people, it's like, it's just like such a great city because it has everything except for the wicked traffic, right? You know, of those really large towns. So I think that there's a sweet spot, and there's this something that's special about Milwaukee. I think in part because there's homegrown businesses like Cousin Subs. There's family businesses that exist, but then there's this new kind of this regeneration of Milwaukee to say, you know what, you should come to us because, you know, we're growing in our technology, you know, and what we can offer, and there's new jobs available, and there's, you know, there's just things that are that you can, and you can have a really great quality of life, but, you know, Milwaukee should never be overlooked.
Hey everyone, welcome back to this episode of the Go-Getters Podcast. Not only do we have a very special guest today, we have Christine Spett, the CEO of Cousin Subs. Cousin Subs was started in 1972 by Christine's father, Bill, and his cousin, Jim Shepherd. They're now at about 100 stores in Wisconsin and Illinois. Christine joined the business in 2001. In 2008, she was named CEO, and in 2015, she added the president title. Or were you named president and then CEO?
I was president first in 2008, and then in 2015 was president and CEO.
And you've recently stepped down from the president role to focus more on strategy, big picture things. We will get into that and that transition. Every article I read about Cousins too in prep for this was about very aggressive growth goals, and just this year they landed a 40 unit deal in Chicago to block off that market by a investment firm down there, the OM Group.
Right. Two brothers. They are also serial entrepreneurs, and they have selected Cousins as part of their business strategy. So they own the DMA essentially for the Chicagoland region.
So we'll get into that, but a huge growth happening there with that 40 store deal. And then in 2013, we'll get into this too, just the community involvement that Cousins has. The Make It Better Foundation was established, which focuses on health, wellness, education, ending hunger, and there's been hundreds of thousands of dollars donated between nonprofits, scholarships, and cancer treatment for Wisconsin residents. So Cousins is doing a lot of great things in the community, and I'm excited to just dive into overall family business dynamics too. Christine joining the family company. I saw you work with your husband as well, or he's involved in the company.
He is.
So we will get into all that. So thank you so much for coming on the show. It's great meeting you for the first time and having you here.
Hey, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for the opportunity, and I love to tell the stories. So
let's start from the beginning. How did Cousins happen?
Well, when my dad, who's from Atlantic City, moved to Milwaukee because this is where my mom is from, and they were married, and after he got out of the Navy and started, they made their home here in Milwaukee. He was in the printing industry and not terribly enamored with it for himself, and really missed those East Coast style sub sandwiches that he remembered from Atlantic City. So basically, he, I think at some point, was laid off from his third shift printing job, and thought, you know what, I'm going to start a restaurant, a sub sandwich restaurant. He recruited his cousin Jim from Atlantic City. So they are cousins. It's the real deal, and that's where we get the name from. And Jim moved his family out, and they opened their first location on 60th and Silver Spring in Milwaukee. So it was an old pizza restaurant, and they bought used equipment, and, you know, the rest is history, I guess.
Yeah, and what was your mom doing at the time? What did she think of all this?
Well, she was, I wasn't born yet, and I think my brother was probably about a year old.
Okay.
So I think that it was, you know, back then it was something that they wanted to do because they thought they could run a restaurant. It wasn't the intent to necessarily grow the business into a brand and have the success that they did, but it was really just started with that dream that my dad felt that the notion of these East Coast style sub sandwiches, which really were the bread is the hallmark of the brand, you know, he felt that was just lacking here in the Milwaukee area. So she supported him. She was the first cashier, but then shortly after stayed home to raise my brother and I then.
Yeah. And let's go to your childhood. What was it like growing up when your parents owned a cool sub shop?
It was great. I would love to go into the restaurants and, you know, sample product, of course. And it was just a lot of fun. And I remember in the early years attending like grand opening celebrations for new stores that were growing because they had initial success, which was really, really a blessing. And then, you know, kind of quickly grew organically store by store. So, I mean, I was really young in those like I said, I wasn't born when the company started, but came by shortly after. And then just being part of that family business has been great. I mean, it was something that I could share with my friends. And certainly it was my first job when I was 15. I couldn't wait to start working. So my first job was at the Germantown location, which is still there today, actually newly remodeled. And actually owned now by my brother and his business partners. So it's kind of funny how family businesses take turns like that.
Nice. And you go back to your father and his cousin starting that first store and not really expecting a ton of growth. And then you're talking about, you know, when you were growing up, when you were very young, you remember going to grand openings and things like that. What made Cousins successful initially and spurred that initial growth?
I think so much of it had to do with the product, that it was a flavor that and a taste that the residents of Milwaukee had not yet experienced. There were other sub shops around, certainly, but one of the things that, like I mentioned earlier, is the importance of the bread. And we still have, it's our own bread recipe, but in those very early years, my dad worked with the baker who baked bread for his favorite sub shop in Atlantic City, which is still in operation today in Atlantic City. We always visit it when we go there. And so he worked with that baker to really formulate the recipe that he felt was best representative of an East Coast style sub sandwich. So that is Italian bread with a little bit of crust on the top and softer on the inside, but it has a good bite to it. There's density there. And I don't need to communicate that because people all the time when I meet them and they know that I work at Cousins, they will tell me, oh, your bread is the best. And that recipe really hasn't changed in the 47 years that we've been here. So it's been, that's certainly is kind of the hallmark. And then the products, right? I mean, we have our freshly grilled steaks. We have been working with the same steak supplier who's out of Philadelphia for over 40 years.
Really?
Yeah. And we've longstanding relationships with the suppliers, with many of our suppliers that we believe just continue to perform and support our business. So,
and back then, obviously now there's a ton of chains. Was this very new to the Milwaukee market at that point in time? And was that helpful as well?
I think so. You know, I think there were just a couple of competitors at the time. And, you know, I don't know that Bill and Jim were necessarily worried about that because I think they were more interested in just launching the dream of having Cousin subs and doing it in a way that they felt was most representative of the flavors and the taste that they wanted. So I think they kind of made the competition irrelevant. And then when they saw how successful it was, just in the sense of people really resonated with that, with the first store even on 60th and Silver Spring, when people really enjoyed that, then they opened up their second on Farwell and, you know, really were able to grow from there. And they were, you know, just had the blessing of being able to continue to grow. I mean, I still meet people today because I work in our restaurants with some regularity.
Mm-hmm.
And I still meet people today. They're like, oh, I was a guest at your store on 60th and Silver Spring. And everybody has a story about their Cousin's experience, which is really fun to hear about. So,
yeah, and we're going to get to you working in the stores later in the show because I want to dive into that and when you got back to doing that or started doing that. But I want to go back to you. So you're 15. You say you love working in those stores. Did you think you would grow up and join the family business? What did you want to do when you were growing up?
I didn't think that was my path. So I had worked there as a teenager, and then on and off in college, I went to Marquette University. So,
nice.
Yeah, thanks. And, you know, I didn't think necessarily that was my path. I mean, my bachelor's is in criminology and law studies, so it's not really related to the restaurant industry.
Not really.
And then my thought was that I really wanted to, you know, I did some volunteer work with homeless families in Florida after college, That led me to obtain a master's degree in public administration from American University in DC. So even then, you know, as I was kind of going through my education, I was thinking that Cousins was probably not where I was going to be. And it was really only after that, when I spent a year in Madison working at the Legislative Audit Bureau, that my parents talked to me about a job opportunity at the office at the support center at Cousins in human resources.
What was your initial reaction when they brought that up?
Well, you know, I was really intrigued by it, actually, because it was something that was, again, a little bit out there, because we didn't sit down at the dinner table in the evenings and say, you know, you'll be doing this and you'll be doing that and, you know, you're definitely working for the family business. And I've often said that that was really so beneficial. And so in hindsight, it's really appreciated that my parents gave me the freedom and flexibility to explore my own interests in my years of education. And I think that because they didn't just have it as a foregone conclusion that I would work in the family business, that they would, that I want, now that I'm here by choice because it's where I want to be. It's not because I feel like I have to work and continue the family legacy. There was absolutely no pressure to do that. And even when the job opened up in human resources in 2001, that was something that, you know, if I didn't want to do it, that would have been okay with them. There was no pressure. So when they presented me with the opportunity, I thought it was interesting because back then, the human resources wasn't its own department. It was kind of within each department. And the company had grown enough to say that we wanted to have have its own formalized department. Interestingly enough, my internships and my experience even getting my master's in public administration, again, not an MBA, but that I had internships in HR departments. So I had exposure to that. And so it wasn't completely out of left field.
You said there was no pressure to join. Did you still feel pressure when you accepted it and went in there as the president's daughter, or like you had a chip on your shoulder and you had something to prove maybe to either your parents or the other employees there?
Certainly, I wanted to make sure that I was going to add value and make sure that I wasn't just, you know, the owner's daughter coming in, even though I was the owner's daughter coming in, right? So some things you just can't hide from, you know, and it's just a matter of fact. But you know, we set it up in such a way that I certainly didn't report to my dad. I reported to our VP of ops, and him and I had not a ton of interaction, and I didn't have a lot of interaction with his partner at the time either. So I think they just tried to normalize that experience as much as possible. And you know, of course, being in the family business, you know all the family dynamics that are going on. And then so kind of how do you balance that with really just trying to get a department going, focusing on the things that were really critical to Cousins, right? You know, anything HR, you know, yep. Staff, recruiting, you know, and things like that. So
what are the pros and cons of the family business dynamics? How is that?
Well, I think it's changed over the years. You know, I think that you know, things changed after my dad's partner passed away, probably 12 years ago now, I think it is. And, that changed because it was no longer that partnership. So, you know, if you did any research about Cousins, you would know that Bill and Jim didn't have the greatest relationship, and it was strained over the years as the years went on. So, and then certainly when Jim passed, there was a lot of litigation that happened, you know, and we came through that. But it just, those family dynamics changed in the sense that I think my dad then felt more comfortable to think that I could be a path for succession for him, because he didn't want to manage the day to day. And he also had two outside presidents kind of around that time in the mid-2000, you know, around 2004, 2005. And then, but then after they exited, then it was kind of, well, you know, he wouldn't necessarily have to sell the company if there's an interested party, myself, who could maybe take the helm.
Yep.
So.
And your husband's in the company too. What is that relationship like, working with him on a daily basis?
Yeah, I, and then well,
you guys
I love
have
it.
Kids together.
We
as well.
Do. Yeah, we have two boys. Yeah, yeah, they're young. Yeah, you know, 6 and 3. But I love it, and I think, you know, I guess you'd have to ask him if he loves it as much as I do. But you know, that was another thing that I wanted to make sure that my husband still maintained his own identity and didn't just and you know didn't just. Wasn't just the spouse of the boss. So, you know, we have, so he doesn't certainly report to me. He reports to the VP of development. They have their own relationship. I really stay out of the way when it comes to, you know, what they're doing, you know, and how they're, you know, the strategies for development and growth and performance and all that. But I will say why I like it so much is because, you know, he is my right-hand person, you know, in life. So it's great to have, to be able to talk to somebody, talk to your spouse about your work, and they really understand it. It's not just, you know, like he knows the names and the faces and the strategies and the family dynamic especially. So it's great because he offers, you know, the wisdom and the and insight and a perspective that maybe I don't have because, you know, I'm in the position I'm in. So so he does that and he loves it. He also has his own identity as well, his own life. He works on his, father has a ranch in South Texas and he's an outfitter. So, you know, he has certainly carved out his own name, which is, I think really, that's really important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you guys, how many kids do you have? How old are they?
We have two kids, two boys. They're 6 and then our 3-year-old will be turning 4 in September.
You have a 6 and a 3-year-old. What's it like being a woman CEO and a mom at the same time?
Well, I love it. But I have great support teams in my life. So I'm not doing it by myself. So the leadership team at Cousins, they're fantastic. My president is awesome. And we can talk about that when you want, about that transition. Yep. And then at home, we just have the care and the support services in place that, you know, it's balanced. And my husband is, I've always said this, he's very much a, you know, he's like a 50% parent, right? Like, I don't feel like as a mom and a working mom, I'm not taking on the whole burden of raising the kids. We're sharing that responsibility. And bless the moms that are single moms or that have to do it all, because I don't know how they do it, because it's an incredible task, right? To work and produce for the family, but then also be the caretaker at home. So I'm very lucky that I have, it's really balanced.
Yeah, absolutely. Work-life balance is a hot term. You just mentioned balance a few times. What are your views on that? Is there any, or is it just more integrated and you're good with that?
It's important for us to have work-life balance and not just for myself, certainly, but for my support center team and people in the restaurants. So, you know, restaurants sometimes get a bum rap when it comes to that work-life balance, because a lot of restaurant companies, you know, the general managers, the management teams, they're working 60, 70 hours a week. And it's really, I mean, and it's tough work because you're working in a restaurant. So you're around food and you're standing on your feet and you have the challenges of your staff if they're not performing, and then you just have, you know, and you have guests and you want every guest to be happy, but sometimes they're not always happy, so you manage through that too. I think at Cousins, what I'm really proud of is that people can achieve a work-life balance, particularly like in our restaurants. Our general managers, they're generally not working over 50 hours a week. You know, they have good benefits. They're not, and the hours of our restaurants aren't typically into the wee hours of the morning. We don't have 24-hour operations. We don't have breakfast. So there's things like that that really, when people are thinking, do I want a career in food service in restaurants, you know, this is something that people can have a very nice career here. As a matter of fact, we have two general managers that have, one is on 36 years and one's on 35 years, and they're still energized and enjoy their work. So we know that won't always be the case with that kind of tenure, but I think we can offer people good work-life balance. And the same at our corporate support center as well. I'm of the mindset that I think you really need to enjoy where you're working, because you're spending the best hours of your life at your job. Doesn't mean every day it's going to be great, but it should mean that you should feel that your work is valued, that you're valued, you have opportunities for growth, and that there's a balance there. In return, I ask, you know, that you're held accountable, that you work very hard, and that you're buttoned up, and you're in it for the mission of Cousins while you're engaged, you know, at your job. So it's a give and take, but you know, I think we're fairly reasonable in our approach.
Hey everyone, it's Richie Burke, your host of the Go-Getters and founder of GGMM. Since you're listening to this episode, you clearly understand the power of podcasting, yet a lot of brands have yet to take advantage of this medium. Based off the success of our podcast, we recently launched GGMM's podcasting content service, where we're currently helping brands like On Milwaukee, Trek Bicycle, Collier's, and more not only create audio and podcasting content, but also take that content and turn it into engaging video and written content to use across platforms. So if you're looking to better communicate with your employees internally or your consumers and are interested in learning more and think you're a good fit, just head to ggmm.io, ggmm.io. Thanks for tuning in. Let's get back to the show. And so you guys have retooled quite a bit over the last few years as far as organizational structure, your leadership team. You've done a massive rebrand that was put into place a couple of years ago and is still being rolled out to all the stores. I'm guessing that's not an easy process when you have as many locations as you do. It just doesn't, the switch doesn't flip overnight. Talk to me about why this all started happening with the rebrand and the leadership transition. Was there a point where you were like, sometimes you need to hit a bottom point to really actually be motivated to make a change? Did something happen to spur all of that?
I don't know if it was any one thing. From my perspective, when I was, and this was probably six years ago now, when we were looking at the brand, maybe even a little bit more than that, but, you know, looking at the brand, it was, you know, 40 years old, or, you know, just over 40 years old, had those classic legacy issues, tired stores, needed to maybe reevaluate some of the support center team, and have and just really take an honest deep dive of the brand and then say, well, all right, we're doing well. I mean, the company was getting sales, you know, it's still profitable, still could do things in the community, but you know, and that would have been fine to say, you know what, we're good, we're going to stay on the path. But we felt that if we really wanted to ignite growth, re-engage in a more meaningful way with the communities where our stores are, we really needed to update the brand. And that's where it began. So, you know, we started with this branding relaunch that you mentioned. And it's an overtime process. It's not overnight because we also have franchisees. So while we own about 25% of our locations, that means that the rest are owned by owner operators or people doing business as a Cousins subs. So with that, there's contracts and then it's about communicating those expectations. So realizing that it wasn't only about corporate stores getting remodeled because it's a significant investment. It was really about walking the franchisees, getting them across the bridge to say, this is why it's going to be really important for you to reinvest in your business. And it's not only because the brand will benefit, but we believe your business will benefit as well. So that's been happening, and that will continue to happen until all the stores are remodeled. But that was one of the biggest things that launched that, because it's the most obvious to the guest when they walk into a new restaurant or a brand, you know, a remodeled restaurant or a brand new restaurant, they'll see that it's different. We can talk about our brand values. We talk about our foundation. We talk about our cuisine philosophy. We can talk about our history, which people really like as well, because they don't really know, well, what is the story of Cousins? And then particularly in this market, they're very surprised when they realize, oh, it started here. That's pretty cool. So it is a local company. And they can, and people can feel pretty good about supporting that.
Yeah. And as far as Cousins growth in the franchise model, so just going back and doing research before we've talked, it seems like, you know, every article I've read between 2010 and today has talked about aggressive growth. Yet it seemed like from my research, and correct me if I'm wrong, you guys were kind of at a 100 store-ish plateau. And then now all of a sudden you signed that 40 store deal with that Chicago group. Can you touch on, did you guys hit, you know, were you stagnant over those years? Did you have ups and downs where some expansions may not have worked and some did? Tell me about that and how you kind of guys have kind of got to where you are.
Well, part of that rebranding was really taking a hard look at our franchise operators and asking ourselves, are they the partners that we believe will help grow the brand? are they themselves successful? Because if you're not, if you're a franchise company and if your individual franchisees aren't successful, that won't, that not only, of course, doesn't help them, it doesn't help the brand. So not only, I would actually tell you that we closed 40 units. So we, when I started.
You did, okay.
Right. When we started in this rebranding initiative, and this was probably, and maybe even a few years before that, you know, one of the first things we did was we did an evaluation of the locations. And so that meant ultimately closing 40 units. Not very popular, but yet the right thing to do because I just, because we needed to take a more global look. And we also needed to just help exit people that maybe weren't right for the brand.
What was that like for you? I know how difficult it is to fire a single person. What is it like to shut down 40 stores?
It takes a lot of backbone to do that. But yeah. I think what we did and what we really were trying to do, and I think we hopefully people would tell you that we did this well, was we were very transparent and it was very much of a conversation. It wasn't, you know, because again, with franchisees, you're in an agreement. It's a 10-year franchise agreement. So you only have a certain, you know, boundary to work within because you're obligated as the franchisor in ways and the franchisee's obligated. So it was really, so you weren't going to come in there and strong arm them and one day they were going to say their business, they lost their business because of Cousin Subs. It was really about a conversation to say, you know, with them and a lot of conversations, you know, is this for you? Is this the business that you want to be in? You know, do you want to reinvest in the brand? You don't? Okay. Do you want to sell your business? Do you want to, you know, close your business? And so it was really much more conversational. But we were consistent in that conversation and we messaged that kind of across the system that, hey, we are taking steps to better the brand and strengthen the core. And so, you know, kind of get ready for some conversations. But really, it's about the collaboration and the relationship because you're asking franchisees to do business as a Cousin Subs and you're asking them to operate in a way you want them to operate and look the way you want them to look. And, you know, that doesn't happen. Again, you can't just be heavy-handed with that because it just doesn't work. Because again, you have the franchise agreement that you're bound by.
Yeah, and I'm guessing with the rebrand and the clearer vision, you guys probably vet out franchisees differently. I know I read in an article that you guys are focused more on multi-unit franchisees opposed to just one, which would obviously make sure they're very serious about the business and investing in it for you to invest in them.
That's right. There's a depth that we like to see with new franchisees. Do they have the capital resources to grow the number of stores that they're looking at? Do they have the human resources and the human capital to be able to support that growth? Do they understand the business and the restaurant? You know, we're not looking for the operator that says, hey, I'm looking, you know, I just want to run a restaurant and I want to, or I'm looking for something for my spouse. We get that from time to time. It's, I'd like something for my spouse. And sometimes it's like, well, I don't know if restaurants are, I mean, it's a lot of work, right? I mean, there's nothing, whether you have one restaurant or multiples, it's a lot of work and it's not glamorous work necessarily. You're not, you know, in the lobby always shaking hands and kissing babies. You're cleaning toilets and then you get to do paperwork and then you have to make sure that your order is on time and that the sub quality is all right. And then you're training employees. So we really try to get people through the door and that's where my husband does with franchise. Because he's our director of franchise sales. You know, he has those conversations with people to help them to, first of all, understand what their perspective is and what their experience is, but then also for what they can expect with Cousins. It's not to suggest that we'll never have single unit operators or operators of one or two stores. That can be, but I think if you're wanting to grow in new markets such as Chicago, yeah, you need somebody with depth to be able to do that.
Yep. Let's talk about you stepping down as president. And you've promoted your CFO to that role, and you've described it as the perfect yin-yang relationship that was needed for the company. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so that that started on January 1st this past year, so 2019. And before that, we had some movement within my leadership team. So there was a period of time that my where I didn't have where my VP of Ops left, and there was maybe 8 months or so where then I really stepped in and was running Ops with my finance guy, because Ops is not. It's not just about quality, service, and cleanliness. It's also about the numbers and making sure that you're meeting your goals and that you're able to run profitable restaurants. And there's, of course, formulas and spreadsheets and all that. So I was really, really, really in the weeds on that, meeting weekly with our area directors, talking about staffing levels, talking about personnel issues, which I enjoyed. It was a lot of fun. But then since then, we hired a senior director of operations and talent, brought him on board about just over a year ago now. And then really then from there thought about, well, what is where am I best serving the company? And is it being in the weeds, looking at the spreadsheets? Because that's not really my forte. It's not really where I want to be. And those things are being done because they're necessary parts of the business. Because as I tell my support center, We have to have earnings in order to reinvest in the community, in order to reinvest in our brand, and in order to reinvest in them. So those are things, and this is why we try to do this, right? So I was in there and in the weeds, but it wasn't. That's not necessarily where I wanted to be, because I did those things at the expense of maybe franchise relations, getting out and talking with franchisees, being in the restaurants, you know. Really having great relationships with the employees in our corporately owned restaurants. So, because there's just only so much time during the day. So then it really came to light that Jason Westhoff, our president, you know, former CFO, he's been with us for 7 years. You know, this was his forte, and we had a good relationship because he's been with me for a few years. So it wasn't like it was a surprise. And it was something that we talked about and felt it was really right for the company. And I'm fine with getting out of the way and letting people that are better at things do those things better than I can do them. So I make no mistake about it. I know where my weaknesses are, and I'm certainly not running the company by myself. So having Jason in there has just been really, I mean, more of a blessing than I could even really imagine, because I've been in our restaurants now. I'm meeting with franchisees. I'm meeting one with this afternoon. And it's just been really great, because how I describe it is I'm really top line and bottom line with all the culture. And Jason really sweats everything in between. So he's executing how we manage our business. He's executing and overseeing the leadership team and all those things. Because he's taking care of all of that, he allows me to then do what I think that I – where I can bring the most value, which is driving culture and community – and the message about Cousins.
Yeah, I love that. Speaking of in the trenches, so tell me about you going back and working in the stores. How often do you do this? And have you been doing this since you rejoined the company in 2001? Or was there a point where, you know, you needed to go back in there to see how things were doing? Tell me about that.
When I first became the president in 2008, I went on a store tour and visited every store that we had, franchise and corporate stores. And that was great, just to simply meet the franchisees and understand, you know, kind of their business from their perspective. But really, I had not spent a ton of time in the restaurants, even though that's where I enjoy being. But yet again, the daily rigors of the business take over, and sometimes you just can't get stuck. You can't get out from behind your desk. So that was the situation with me. And then what changed that was then when I was running ops for that period of time at the end of 18 into I'm sorry at the end of 17 into 18. You know, then I was out in the stores more because I was the responsible person then to make sure that these stores are running well, that they're clean, that they're giving great guest service, that they're doing what they need to do. So then that allowed me to be in the stores. But really what has happened then since Jason's become our president, that has then allowed me to actually go work in our restaurants. So I'll work shifts over lunch usually, I'll try to do the festivals. And the other week I was in our food truck, you know, and which was a ton of fun. So I'll cashier. like every, like, you know, just like anybody else. And it's great because I can interact with our guests. Sometimes they might ask me, like, you look familiar. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm Christine. So, you know, people can have fun with that. And it's really great for the employees. So I don't know. I try to do that maybe a couple times a month anyway. Yeah. And then and meet with franchisees in the same way. I'm not working in their restaurants, but it's more about just a relationship meeting to see how they're doing.
What does that do for culture and morale? And do you think more CEOs should do that and go into the weeds once in a while?
I think it's great. It's working for us. I think that the culture is people are they're fairly nervous if they don't know me that well when I'm coming into the restaurant. But I really try to put people at ease because we're just there to have fun.
Do you drop in and surprise them or do you?
No, I wouldn't do that to them. I mean, sometimes if I'm just going to a cousin's to feed my family, certainly I'll just pop in. But if they know that I'm working, because they can also use me as like a legitimate cashier for that time there. So, you know, I'll kind of help them out. So, but they're, you know, sometimes they're a little nervous, but then hopefully by the end of the day, they say that they've had fun. And that's my goal because, and it's great because I can talk to them and get to know their stories, their lives, and whether or not other CEOs should do it, I think you should do it if you feel like you're comfortable doing something like that. I think if you're going to go into, step out of your comfort zone and get into an environment that you're not typically in and do it in a way that might be robotic or awkward, I think that can be maybe more problematic. For me, it's very comfortable. I'm people first, so it's something that I don't have any problem doing. I don't have any problem dealing with guests. You know, working with them, you know, even if, you know, it's fine. I'm totally in my comfort zone. So it's great. And I love it for the culture and I'm just proud to do it.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Make It Better Foundation. You guys have done a lot of work. Why is it important for cousins to be involved in the Milwaukee community and where do you see that going and how do you see that growing?
I think that businesses have a responsibility that if they're in the community, they're employing people within their communities. But I think that businesses can take it one step further and show support for their communities in different ways. I think good things happen with that and on many levels. You know, Bill and Jim have always had a history of supporting the community. They just never, and they always had a foundation. They just never talked about it, you know, because it maybe, you know, since the, you know, in the early years, it was just, you know, they would just give money, right?
Right.
You know, and make their donations and just kind of be very quiet about it. I think with today's consumers, they want to know, are these companies supportive of their communities, right? And I think that's a fine ask of consumers. And I think it's, for us, it's about positioning ourselves to say, yes, we do. We've had a long history since 1972 of supporting communities. But now with the official formulation of the foundation, we're ready to talk about that and be very pointed in how we're supporting them. You mentioned our pillars, right? Youth education, hunger, and health and wellness.
How do you choose those causes? Hunger obviously seems like a natural fit because you're a sub company, but how do you choose the other ones?
Very carefully. And the beauty of Cousins is that we really can be so broad in our approach to how we want to help people in the community. So on kind of the corporate level or system level, we have great partnerships, like say with the Vince Lombardi Cancer Fund Foundation. And so that's more of a kind of a system-wide approach, right? So it's cancer research, you know, and it just fits with our brand very well. On the smaller end, we have a foundation board that meets quarterly, and we review grants that come in, and they're vetted to make sure that they align with at least one of the pillars that we support. And we review grant applications, and that foundation board is made up of our leadership team and also franchisees of Cousins Subs. And so we go around and we really just select. We know what our budget is for that quarter, and then we select one or more organizations to support. And those are not often large dollar amounts. It might be $2,000. It might be $1,000. These are these very local charities that we're able to support that have very specific causes that, you know, that are filling a need in the community. So that has been a sweet spot. But the beauty is that Cousins can do the larger, more, much more publicly facing support campaigns. Or like say we have a great relationship with the Hunger Task Force, right? Because it fits a pillar. So and that was through our sponsorship, say with the Milwaukee Bucks. So we've been able to do that on the larger scale. But then there's all these smaller organizations that we can support, you know, on a different level.
Yep. And as far as Milwaukee, the city's changed a lot, and it seems like it's grown a lot in the last 5 years and has an upward trajectory. What's it been like running a business here to this point? And do you see all the growth helping Cousins?
I think the growth will help Cousins. I think that, you know, Milwaukee is it's a great city and the surrounding suburbs. I mean, certainly there are we have our challenges and our issues and our flaws as any city would, but I think that, you know, Milwaukee has done so much, and what I hear from people, it's like, it's just like such a great city because it has everything except for the wicked traffic, right? You know, of those really large towns. So I think that there's a sweet spot and there's this something that's special about Milwaukee. I think in part because there's homegrown businesses like Cousin Subs. There's family businesses that exist, but then there's this new kind of this regeneration of Milwaukee to say, you know what, you should come to us because, you know, we're growing in our technology, you know, and what we can offer, and there's new jobs available, and there's, you know, there's just things that are that you can and you can have a really great quality of life living here. Maybe, you know, that maybe you didn't consider in maybe when somebody's exiting school or something, right? You know, they're thinking maybe they want to move to a big city or move to a warm climate. But, you know, Milwaukee should never be overlooked.
Yeah, for sure. As CEO, has there been one, what was the biggest kind of obstacle that you've had to overcome to get to where you are personally? Or yeah, let's go with that.
You know, I would say that my like I said, my parents have been supportive of my career. So, you know, with, again, not pressuring me to be at Cousins, but then choosing to be at Cousins. And my dad has been, you know, and he's retired now, but he still comes into the office. And so we have conversations it's a very open relationship, and he has great relationships with my leadership team. So they have a lot of regard for him, which is really nice. But I think probably just, I don't know if it's an obstacle or if it's just something that, you know, it's just gaining that experience and then the confidence to know what I'm really good at and then what I'm not good at, and then making sure that I'm filling the gaps with people who are really good at what they do to make sure that, you know, that Cousins continues to grow and move forward. So it's about, you know, setting aside any ego and realizing that you're just one person, and certainly it's going to take a team of people to make something go.
Yeah. And then last question, out of everything you've done, what are you most proud of?
Related to Cousins?
Could be anything.
Could be anything. Oh my gosh.
You could do one personal, one related to Cousins.
Well, I guess related to Cousins, I'm really proud of the rebranding and the fact that we were unafraid to close restaurants when headlines will always tell you, you know, in the franchising world about, it's always about numbers of units that are opening. And for me, it was not about that. It was about doing the right thing and making sure that we were strong at the core, making sure that we were building our individual unit sales, creating the healthiest and working with franchisees to be the healthiest that they can be. So I'm really proud of that because that's not for anybody. You have to have thick skin to brace yourself from any feedback that you might get from your internal people wondering why we were closing restaurants, to externally people wondering why are you closing restaurants, you know, but then really being able to have the patience to see it through, which we've done, and the results of those, of that initiative, of the rebranding initiative and refocusing franchisees has been just tremendous, both just as a branding and a company that's in communities, but then also for performance in our profitability. And it's been, so that's been really great. And I don't know that when I think about it, maybe everybody wouldn't want to do that. Personally, you know, I don't know. I'm just proud to be a mom of two and, you know, and raise my kids. They're so much fun and there's never a dull moment. And it's, and they're, you know, they're, I don't know, we just have a, we have a lot of fun together and are trying to enjoy the summer and getting ready for school to start, not in, that's not too far off, so.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. It was great having you, great meeting you, and congrats on everything you've done in the new expansion in Chicago. It'll be really exciting to watch that and see how it all plays out.
Thanks, Richie. Really appreciate it. Thank you.